Back.
Oh, thank you.
You had a little vacation last week, is that right?
Did we went up to Rocky Mountain National Park, Grand Teton, Yellowstone, and Teddy Roosevelt. Kind
Oh,
of did a
wow.
little four-park tour.
A couple at the end there that I've not been to that I would like to go to.
Yeah. Well, they're all worth it in their own way.
How were the crowds?
So with Rocky Mountain, you had to make a reservation,
Right.
and it only allowed a certain amount in per time segment. But once you're in all day, so there's just a cap there. That didn't seem too bad. Yellowstone was obviously just packed. You couldn't tell there was a pandemic. Teddy Roosevelt, I did ask them what things looked like, and they said as far as their visitor centers, they were operating at about half of what they normally see. And Grand Teton, I mean, it seemed like business as usual. Every lodge that we drove by had a no vacancy sign, but
That's interesting. I mean, I read about these national parks, and there's been some that have actually been overwhelmed because of the pandemic. People have taken driving trips, so that's curious. That's interesting that some actually were seeing less visitors.
Well, they're judging that by visitor center. And like, for instance, in
Right.
Yellowstone, all the visitor centers are closed.
Right.
So
Interesting.
it's a harder measurement there.
Right.
But I'm sure they have the numbers of, entrance fees, and
Right.
I haven't seen what that looks like.
Fascinating.
Yes. But 3:30, let's go ahead and get started with the Des Moines Waterworks Planning Committee meeting. We'll just have folks introduce themselves. Well, let's go ahead and identify the board members on the call. I see myself, Andrea Bolton, Joel Ashbrenner,
Hello.
and Graham Gillette. Are there any other board members that I'm not
Think Diane's
seeing?
on.
Yep, I'm here.
And Diane Munns. Great. Thank you all for joining us today. And we'll just have staff introduce themselves as they speak, as well as any public comments at the end.
Very good, Andrea. This is Ted Corrigan, and I'll kick it off here very quickly and then hand off to Michael McKernan, who's going to do both of the presentations today. And actually, in the opposite order that they're listed on the agenda, we're going to start with an update on PFAS, the PFAS contamination at the guard base. You're all aware of that, and we've been working on that for some time, and we've made some progress in addressing those issues, and we want to share kind of where we are with that and what we're planning to do going forward. And then we want to talk about our water shortage plan, which is very timely today because we are, as you all know, in the midst of a drought. We're also experiencing some water quality issues on the Des Moines River and starting to see some water quality issues on the Raccoon. And so we want to bring you up to speed on the plan itself, first of all. And then talk a little bit about the water quality challenges, the drought and water availability challenges that we're facing, and how that relates to our water shortage plan and the stages in the plan and what we intend to do here in the near term. So, with that as sort of a quick outline, Mike, I'll hand it off to you and let you start with PFAS, I believe.
Very good. Let me get the share going here. How's that look?
It looks good.
Okay. Thanks for the intro, Ted. Again, two topics today here. There's no correlation or causation here, just two topics wrapped up in the same PowerPoint. We'll deal with PFAS first, and then we'll roll into water shortage plan. Again, in a broad sense, is this is us trying to coexist again with other activities in the watershed. their National Guard operation on top of the hill there to the south has had a release of PFAS contamination to the environment. We're seeing that, and today we're gonna give a brief update on that. We're gonna review some of the communications that have been had. We're gonna talk about the working group that was formed and the outputs of that working group. There's some positive news there. And then we'll talk about moving forward. We got a little bit of disappointing news from the Guard here in the last month, but we still think we're in an overall good position to move forward. We just wanna get you briefed on that today. Our awareness of this began in the first quarter of 2019. And there were some timely communications from our organization to others to just let people know that we had concerns. You know, our gallery system is pretty valuable. It's more than pretty valuable. It's incredibly valuable to our success, and it's had its challenges in the past in regard to pollutants wanting to find their way into the gallery. And this is another example. We wanted to make sure people were aware of this. So the Attorney General, DNR, and congressional representation there have been communicated with. Some have been on site to discuss the topic. The working group that was formed is primarily Waterworks, the Guard, DNR. I'd say the Des Moines Airport is also part of the working group, but the heavy lifting here has been done by the first three parties listed. The graphic here on the slide is from some work accomplished by DNR, but I think it's a very important slide for all of us to be aware of. In the bottom right of that graphic, you can see the kind of the north end of Des Moines Airport operations there, the runway. If you go a little bit further north, middle center of the graphic there, you're on Des Moines Waterworks property, and the gallery system terminates out there in that western open field. And so we have great concern about this. You know, there's pollution leaving the airport property probably in four different directions. We are certainly most concerned about the pollution that's flowing northward, northwest into Frink Creek, and then northward toward the Raccoon River and infrastructure like the gallery that has our attention. So the group's met, I'd probably say 5-6 times, trying to share perspectives, identify tasks or work items to be completed. And that's been fairly productive. If I had to boil it down into two benefits of the working group, I would give a nod to DNR for creating what's called a concept site model. Not too complicated words there, but what does that mean? Well, they put their scientists together and they came to the area and did some groundwater monitoring, some surface water monitoring, some soil monitoring. They did some investigative work to try and quantify the potential risk here and make some recommendations on how to go forward. So DNR accomplished that, and they came back with some recommendations to install some monitoring wells, and we're going to get to that in a second. The other benefit of the working group, from our perspective, has been we were able to be, a lot of these conversations started pre-pandemic, so we were able to, you know, meet face-to-face with local Guard leadership as well as Guard leadership at the state level and really communicate what was in that previous slide. You know, there's a proximity issue here that makes the situation in Des Moines potentially different than others. You got to realize the Guard, part of the Department of Defense, is dealing with this pollutant on hundreds of military installations across the country. So this pollution is not unknown to them, and they are in the process of ranking and prioritizing, trying to figure out where they're going to go and, you know, direct remediation efforts. And so us having the opportunity to engage them and help drive home that point of there may be places that have higher levels of pollution leaving their property, but how many of those properties are within a mile of public water supply. So that's been our message to them. And I would say they're, you know, they get it. They live in the community. The local and state leaders of the Guard, they are likely customers of ours. Last slide today on PFAS, just to kind of wrap it up, is DNR recommended installing some monitoring wells out in the western edges of the park, and specifically putting these monitoring wells between Frink Creek, again, the small tributary that drains into the Raccoon River, but it collects pollution from the Guard property. They wanted to position these wells between Frink Creek and our gallery system. So in this picture, bottom picture, you see just a picture of the wells themselves. Those are access points that allow us to get to some wells. One's deep, like 30 to 40. The other one's shallow, 10 to 20 feet. But that is located probably within 100 yards, 150 yards of the western end of the gallery. Valve chamber number 12 is in the top photo there. So moving forward, we are going to monitor the wells as well as the creek and the gallery. In the gallery in a couple spots, actually. We're going to monitor that moving forward under a variety of conditions. We want to do it under conditions like today, and the lab is slated to get back out there here in the next week or two to kind of get an extreme low river stage condition. But we will continue to sample these wells, you know, under other conditions, high water, cold, wet, warm, dry, the spectrum. So that will persist. This contamination, the PFAS substances, there are thousands of them, and there's a health advisory written around the summation of just two of these substances. So when we generally talk about PFAS, the key health advisory level is this 70 parts per trillion. That's the health advisory level for drinking water that EPA has established. Again, not a regulation yet, but it's a health advisory and one that we want to be mindful of. Some sampling that we did earlier this summer, late June, this was before the wells were installed. Lab went out and monitored the creek, valve chamber 12, valve chamber 8, and also just the gallery. Composite, a sample of the gallery, clear at the east end as it's being pumped into the plant. And you can see some of the levels there, 260 parts per trillion in the creek. And then as you move through the process, as you move from west to east, if that pollutant is getting into the gallery at the far west end, as we hypothesize here, as more water gets added to the system, that concentration gets diluted down. So you're seeing this, again, movement from west to east, and you're seeing those concentrations diminish. If you would have talked to us even just 3 months ago, we would have told you that we didn't have a detectable amount of PFAS in the gallery. The conversations with the working group and some of the folks involved at the National Guard Bureau helped us acquire some more sophisticated testing laboratories. And so the June sample is our first detection of PFAS in the gallery, but it comes with a higher level of instrumentation here. Okay. So we don't want to communicate that this situation is worsening. What we want to tell you is that we are using the most, sophisticated equipment that we can to measure for this. So
Mike, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is it right to say that, you know, unlike nitrate or some other naturally appearing substance, PFAS would not appear on its own? If it wasn't for pollution, we wouldn't have the two parts per trillion in the gallery. Is that fair to say?
I think that's very fair to say. This is a man-made substances. They're incredibly the term they use is they're stable. which is also means they're persistent. They don't break down. They don't change. They're just strong electrical or chemical bonds here. So they're difficult to, you have to deal with them. They're there and you're going to have to put them in the right position to control them. So
can I ask you one more question? And maybe you're going to cover this.
Yes.
But the National Guard stopped using this substance some time ago. And like you say, it's a stable chemical, so it's going to exist for a while, but it's going to seep out of that ground around the airport. Has anybody estimated how long it will take for it to seep out of the airport, or will it always be present there and seep out in some level?
I'll take a crack at this, and then I'll ask Ted to weigh in and potentially others. You know, if the right funds can be found at the federal level, I think there's an opportunity to go to the property and, you know, collect the pollution and move it offsite. Will that be 100%? I probably can't say that, but can the brunt of it be acquired and disposed of? I think the answer to that is yes. The travel path for this appears to be through the ground and into the creek. There is some confidence from DNR that that pollutant is not going to want to go deeper. It's going to tend to want to get to the water table level within the soils, and it's going to have a difficult time falling to an even lower elevation. So during a rain event or some elevated groundwater that allows some delivery of water to the creek are going to be the times when we see the pollution. I think that's a key thing. We don't think that this is going very, you know, we don't think it's going real deep and trying to find another pathway to our water supply. We think it is off the property to the creek and then down toward the river. So most of it's going to go to the river, Graham, and some of it as it goes through the creek will likely work its way through the soils toward the gallery.
But has anybody done like a time analysis? I mean, it's one of these things that probably spreads a little bit over time. So has there been any type of estimation of, you know, if we're at 2 parts per trillion right now at the gallery, that in 3 years, if nothing's done in 3 years, we're going to be at 6 parts or 20 parts. Has anybody done that type of time analysis, or is that impossible?
Well, I'm not aware that it's been done. I know the Guard did some extensive analysis of their own before communicating with us, but I don't have good answers on that one, Graham.
One thing I would add, Mike, if you would allow me, is that this contamination likely occurred years ago, and the ground at the airport is heavily contaminated, and it has likely been seeping off of the Guard base before anyone even knew what PFAS was or that it was a problem. And so there's some chance that we're kind of in a steady state right now. We're kind of stable. You know, it's been seeping off for a long time. Without remediation, I think it would seep off indefinitely. There's enough of it there that it would just continue to leave the Guard base and find its way to the creek and find its way past us. And some of it would find its way into the ground near our gallery. So we don't have a good answer to your question, Graham, about, you know, is it increasing or likely to increase, or are we at steady state where we're going to be forever if nothing changes? We just don't have that answer yet. But we do now have the test wells and the better testing methodology that will help us track that very carefully going forward.
I'll stop asking questions, but how long, like the Frink Creek number obviously is alarming at 260. How long have we been testing at Frink? I mean, you know, I'm looking for that, you know, spread over time.
we've got samples that are probably 15 months old, Graham.
Okay.
For us,
it's not like we have it's not like we have years of data. We just have months of data at this point.
Right. And we can get you the data if you'd like. I don't want to alarm you, but that 260 is not alarming compared to some other numbers that we've seen. So, and again, marching forward here, the lab that we're going to use, the wells that we have, and a commitment to continue to monitor this is going to really inform the advocacy that we're asking the Guard to take beyond the boundaries of, Des Moines, Iowa. So we were very hopeful that the Des Moines Air National Guard base would get through this first cut of federal funding for these military installations. Ted was informed probably within the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that unfortunately the Des Moines base did not make the alleged cut. So our path forward here is to, thankfully we went ahead and got these wells installed, and we're going to begin creating a database here that hopefully can improve our ranking. So the wells were installed late July, and part of the package of getting the wells installed by environmental consultant here is just a quick round of samples right out of the wells. And so we've got some results there. The shallow well levels of about 176 parts per trillion, and then the deep well at about 77. So I think the final message here is let's compile the data and use that to aid the advocacy that we need from our colleagues at the Guard, local and state. So, Ted or Kyle, what did I blaze over there?
I don't know that you blazed over anything, but let's see if anybody has any questions, I guess.
I do have a question. You mentioned that this was a stable chemical. So how is it clean from the water supply if it gets to that point? Are we seeing any other instances across the country where they're trying to clean this from the water?
I may have to get back to you on that, Andrea. I know that the typical conventional water treatment plan is not going to be well equipped to remove this. Is there going to be some element of treatment, possibly? Ted?
There are places in the country, I'm aware specifically of some places in Michigan where their public water supplies have been heavily contaminated, and they are implementing technologies to remove PFAS. I would want to do some investigation on what method they're using before we got back to you, but it's certainly possible to remove it. Our hope is that we can, instead of having to remove it, prevent it from entering
our system,
and that's what we want the Guard to do, is clean it up on their site so it'll quit trickling off of their site.
Sure.
That's what we're pressing for. The more information we can gather, I think the better, but there are technologies available. The challenge that we would have is the amount of water that we would have to treat to remove such a small quantity. There would be real technical challenges for us, but there are technologies available to remove it.
Thank you.
To be clear, we made an ask of the federal government to pay for these wells, and they denied that request, and so we paid for the wells out of Des Moines Water Works money. That's correct, Ted?
That is correct, Graham.
And then is anybody else paying for testing, or is all the testing that's being done Des Moines Water Works testing? Is anybody double checking our tests, is kind of what I'm asking.
Mike, do you have an answer?
The ongoing testing at this point in time is going to be our obligation. We have communicated that depending on how this depends on what we see, we may want to re-engage the guard in regard to some expenses associated with the ongoing testing. DNR and the guard did contribute financially to some of the testing associated with the site model work. But yeah, since the wells have been installed and the sampling that will happen with those are presently going to be our obligation.
And I just wanted that said out loud. I mean, here is a problem that's been created by the National Guard, the federal government. They are the polluters. They know it's a problem. We've had to pay for the wells, and we're going to continue to pay for the testing of a problem created by the federal government. Nobody needs to respond to that. I'm just saying, I think, what a lot of us are agitated about.
Indeed.
All right. Shall we change topics?
Thank you. Thank you for this. Yeah, let's hear the next.
Guys, one more thing on the PFAS. Here I am, fun. Go forward, and I'm going to back it up real quick. We will get these slides out to you. And Michelle, I think we should also. Jeff Mitchell has a set of slides that he used when Cindy Axney was on site last year, and those slides might be educational as well in regard to just the pollutant itself and stability and some of its uses. Can we do that, Michelle?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's we'll talk water shortage here. We threw this on the agenda. We hope we didn't jinx anything, but this plan is being given great scrutiny on the campus here in the last week. So typically this is, you know, people think of water shortage plan, they think of high demand times of the year. That's clearly a centric element of the water shortage plan. I threw up some data here. Anything in blue there is a peak day from a given year that was above 85 million. The items in yellow are years where we had annual pumpage in excess of 18 billion gallons. So those are kind of those high demand events over the last, again, 17, 18 years there. So as we just bear that in mind, as we kind of march through the history and some of the concepts and stages of this and how Des Moines Water Works uses the water shortage plan. Incredibly centric to this is a prioritization of water uses. If we're going to be in a position where there's a lack of water or inability to deliver water, which uses should outrank others, if you will. So firefighting, human consumption, bathing, sanitation, those water uses ought to have some clout in regard to other water uses like irrigating turf and recreational efforts out there. As a public water supply, Des Moines Water Works is pretty keen in regard to knowing that they have an obligation to communicate with the community that they serve. The Water Works has had a water shortage plan for some time, but the events of 2012 really allowed us to kind of revisit the plan and honestly formalize it more and communicate and work with the community to develop it. So Ted and Amy, probably in 12 or 13, did some extensive work with the community and also internal staff to kind of repurpose the plan. It has also been integrated into the rules and regulations, which is certainly an important document for Des Moines Water Works. The key variables of the plan target outdoor water use, turf irrigation, automated irrigation, but the plan's broader than just, elevated water demand. It also has enough width to it, the plan that is, to deal with water quality issues, or any unfortunate mechanical issues that might limit or restrict our ability to acquire water, treat the water, and deliver it. So just know that it has some boundaries that go beyond just capacity numbers, although capacity is certainly an incredibly important part of it. The plan is also centric to Des Moines. If it's in our rules and regulations, this is about our customers. This is our plan. This is the Des Moines plan. But in the plan is also messaging that indicates that our wholesale customers, while they're not governed by this, there's an expectation that they have a similar water shortage plan for their public water supplies that they are managing. So there's some demarcations there, some decent collaboration there between Waterworks and the wholesale customers in regard to that understanding. These are the four stages of the plan, pretty quick, fairly straightforward. Voluntary 25% reduction in turf irrigation is step one. Step two is a 50% reduction in turf irrigation. There's a sentiment that for every 25% reduction in turf irrigation, that would remove about 10 million gallons per day of customer demand. So step one, we're trying to drop that customer usage by 10 million gallons per day. Step two would be a statement from us to say, hey, we want to get it down to, you know, 20 million gallons less than, you know, what it would be otherwise. Step three is attempting to get, you know, 35 to 45 million gallons per day of turf irrigation removed off the demand on the system. And steps one and two are voluntary. Three is certainly a significant step, talking about almost cutting demand nearly in half, potentially, if it's a summertime issue. The water rationing step is even more rigorous. There's some rate-related things in there and maybe some fines associated with inappropriate water use during stage four. Each stage of the plan, as it's written, can be triggered or tripped when the projected customer demand is more than 90% of the estimated treatment capacity. So typically, at this point in time, Kyle and company in water production, as customer demand gets close to that 80 million gallons a day, that's a fine time for these types of calculations to be made on a daily basis, so that we can kind of track, are we getting close to the 90% threshold? Where are we? What things can we do to improve the percentage? Is there some equipment that needs to be repaired and brought online to improve these numbers? Are water quality conditions changing that would also impact these numbers? So those are the four steps of the plan. I think with a lot of things that we try and create that fall into plan, we just don't want to follow them blindly. We've had enough experience committing things to word and writing with great intent and spirit. And then when it's time to implement, there's some real world conditions that it's put us in a position where we want to exercise the proper judgment. We don't just write something and follow it blindly. So I would say this is a guideline. And again, that 80 million gallons a day or more in customer demand is certainly going to trigger the daily calculations. I would say we've invoked the plan twice in the last 8-9 years. 2012 was a time when we made strong statements to the community to lower their turf irrigation. 2015, different situation. It was a water quality event. Nitrate concentrations were an issue in 2015. Many of you are aware of that. We went to the community in 2015 and asked them to slow down so that we had a greater chance of regulatory success in regard to meeting the nitrate drinking water standard. In 2020, we find ourselves again, you know, pulling the plan out and giving strong consideration to potentially invoking the steps. We're not there yet, and Ted's going to probably offer some great detail here that's new within the last 24 hours, but, you know, low river conditions in the Raccoon River. There's a drought out there. Des Moines River is in incredibly poor condition right now. And so you couple those two things with the heat and customer demand of last week, and you're starting to bump up against that 90% number. So the plan has been out. Discussions have been had in regard to is it or is it not time to potentially give consideration to invoking the plan. So,
Mike, is that what this graph is showing me then, is the water that we're able to pull out of the Raccoon?
That is a image of the amount of water in the Raccoon River at Van Meter. So that is not about what we are withdrawing. That is about what water is in the Raccoon River coming into the Des Moines metro area. It's probably 150 CFS or maybe even a bit lower today. This image is a couple days old. So that's the amount of water in the river.
Okay.
I think it's of note there, Andrea, on that graph that the yellow triangles near the top are typical or the average, the mean, up around 400. And we're, you know, down below 200, certainly closer to 150. So very low flows on the river.
Can we, let's pick on the red star on the image too, this point right here. This is an effort by ultimately a result of Kyle making some phone calls to USGS to get out and do some spot checks on these river gauges and see if we're getting good information. So that red dot from August 26th is a technician going out and doing a kind of a spot check, calibrate kind of effort. There's been a few of those in the last week and a half. I think that was the last one for me. Any other questions or comments on that?
I would, well, if there are no questions, any questions from the board?
Yeah, Ted, this is Diane. I have a question, and that has to do with how this, what information this gives you about the West Des Moines permit. We know what restrictions are on that permit. Would they be restricted in taking water?
They would not yet be restricted according to the permit as it has been issued. The restriction on their use is triggered by a flow rate of 114 CFS at 63rd Street. And currently, I think the flow rate at 63rd is closer to 150 cubic feet per second. So still a little ways to go before they would be restricted.
Ted, would you just restate kind of where we are with the toxins in the Des Moines River and kind of what you anticipate to happen over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. The toxins in the Des Moines River have been bouncing around a little bit, but the EPA health advisory level for microcystin for a certain age group, children under 6 years old, is 0.3 micrograms per liter. We have been seeing toxins on the Des Moines River at our intake ranging anywhere from 1.5 to 3 micrograms per liter over the last week or week and a half, which is 5 to 10 times the EPA health advisory. The health advisory is not a drinking water standard. It's not enforceable, but for all practical purposes, those health advisories become drinking water standards. And there are public notice requirements if you exceed them. And our processes are not designed for and are not particularly effective at removing them. So anytime the concentration in one of our sources gets above that health advisory level in any meaningful way, we just try to avoid that source. So that's where we find ourselves today. And for the last week and a half or 2 weeks is avoiding the, well, actually it's been longer than that. It's been a month now, Graham, frankly. I think it was the 28th of July when we started seeing toxins over 0.3. So we've been nearly a month avoiding the Des Moines River, and likely that will continue into the fall, which is what we saw last year, all the way from the end of July into November. The toxins concentrations on the Des Moines were above 0.3.
So, I mean, that relates to Diane's question, right? I mean, that those two things are what are concerning us is that, you know, as we go forward, we're experiencing even lower flows in the river and toxin levels stay high. That's the scary problem we may have to deal with.
It is the problem, in fact, that we are dealing with.
But it could be compounded by the fact that you've got another entity drawing water out of the river.
Could be, yes.
Could be.
Yes.
And was all of this scenario kind of spelled out in our first appeals and conversations with DNR, or is this second appeal that we're going to be making the first time that we've kind of laid out a real world scenario that we're facing that causes those implications for having a second source pull from the raccoon?
You know, Andrea, I would say that on our first round of comments, we certainly made the case for the fact that we couldn't count on the Des Moines River always being available, and that we needed to be able to withdraw our full allocation from the Raccoon River. We did make that case. And I think that the DNR heard those comments and accepted that perspective. But they believe that, you know, the water is still in the river. The Raccoon River is still available at that 114 CFS. They're still approaching 75 million gallons of per day of water available in the Raccoon River. The challenge that we're having today, though, is that while it's there, it's loaded with algae, which is creating treatment process issues for us. And as the algae concentrations increase, we're concerned that there will also be toxins there. So there's water in the river. There's as much water as we are allocated exists in the river down to that 114 is what the DNR is saying.
I have larger questions, I guess, fundamentally about their process that I'll ask you, not to digress here. But thank you for that.
You're welcome. I would like to share with the board a couple perspectives on where we are right now. Might be helpful. You know, I just said the water's in the river, and that's true. You know, there's 150 CFS roughly at 63rd Street, which is just upstream from us, which is more than 75 million gallons per day, which is the capacity of the Fluor Drive plant. Loaded with algae, not just cyanobacteria, blue-green algae, but also green algae. And those algae are making it difficult for us to treat more than about 20 million gallons per day of that direct surface water. So while there might be more there, it becomes challenging for us to treat. We have our aquifer storage and recovery wells. They are all three running. They're providing about 9 million gallons per day of capacity today. The Sailorville plant is running fairly effectively. Well capacity at Sailorville is beginning to decline as they lower the outflow from Sailorville Reservoir. Today, we're producing about 7 million gallons per day at Sailorville, which is, you know, a 10 MGD plant, but we're producing about 7. So we're a little bit limited there. At McMullen, the McMullen plant, the wells there are producing just over 10 million gallons per day of water today. They are very limited because of the low river stage. We've learned over the years that the wells at McMullen are very susceptible to low water, and it's low now, and we're getting about 10 million, 10.4, I think Kyle said. We're also taking 3 million gallons per day out of Maffitt Reservoir to supplement the flow there, and we're taking a million and a half out of Crystal Lake, which is a total of about 15 million gallons per day that we're producing at the Maffitt treatment plant. So 25 million gallon per day plant, we're producing about 15. And then here at Fluor Drive, the gallery is holding in there pretty well, somewhere between 17 and 20 million gallons per day. And then we're adding currently about 15 million gallons per day from the Raccoon River. And that's, right now, that's pretty comfortable. There aren't any toxins. We're able to deal with the algae. But if you add all of that together, what I just said, that's about 65 million gallons per day that we're producing pretty comfortably. On Monday of last week, the demand was 85 million gallons per day. And so on Monday of last week, we had to take an additional 20 million gallons per day out of the Raccoon River, which became very challenging because of the algae that we're filtering out. And they plug the filters and result in excessive backwashing, or let me call it frequent backwashing. It just becomes more challenging when the river is low like this. So we are monitoring that situation very carefully. We're doing algae counts on a daily basis. We're going upstream to do algae counts so that we know what's coming. We're also watching the toxin concentrations in the Raccoon River very, very carefully. Currently, they're very low, very manageable, below the health advisory, no issue. We've seen that change pretty quickly, though, and if it changes, that will become an issue for us. If the toxin concentrations on the Raccoon River start to approach what we're seeing on the Des Moines River, we'll have a choice to make. Do we avoid all surface water and produce the amount of water we can with only our shallow groundwater sources and our ASR wells, produce water that is compliant? I think that would be our choice, but that probably won't be enough to meet our current demand. So that's when we get to the point of implementing our water shortage plan.
Ted, I'm sorry. How much are we pulling when we had that day that was reaching 85? How much were we pulling from the Raccoon?
Probably 35 million, Andrea, roughly.
35 million.
Yeah.
Similar question, maybe asked a different way. I was trying to keep up with all the numbers, Ted. What would be our comfortable capacity without either river source?
You know, about 50 right now, about 50 million gallons per day. Kyle might want to tweak that down a couple, but about 50. And we're hoping, frankly, we don't get there. We're hoping the Raccoon doesn't turn on us. We're hoping we don't see toxin concentrations on the Raccoon that will make it an unusable source. But it could happen. I think it's important for the board to be aware of that and be aware that we're monitoring it. The other thing I think is important is for us to let our wholesale customers know that, make sure they're aware of just where we are. We're hoping that we don't go there, but we want them to be aware as opposed to just springing that on them, if you will, someday next week or whenever the time frame may be. So we've actually scheduled a meeting with our wholesale customers for tomorrow morning to give them the same sort of information that we just shared with you and to let them know that we are seeing these toxin and algae issues on both rivers this week, and that while we're not experiencing capacity issues today, it's something we need to be aware of and we need to monitor and we want to keep them in the loop, because if we do get to the point where we want to begin implementation of our water shortage plan, we need their help. Our water shortage plan technically applies to our direct retail customers. They have similar water shortage plans that apply to their retail customers. And frankly, not everyone is aware, if they live in one of these suburban communities, that their water comes from Des Moines. And so when we say we want people to conserve, they don't recognize that that means them too. So not a decision we will make lightly, not something we want to do unnecessarily, but given the change that we're seeing on the Raccoon and the issues that we're already having on the Des Moines, it's something we need to be very conscious of.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions or comments for Ted?
I want to say that this meeting is probably very appropriate for 2020. We talked about a pollutant, a toxin that was released by the federal government into the land, and they're not doing anything to help us stop it. And then we fall into toxins in the water and drought issues that are causing a significant problem to us. And I say this all kind of lightly, and I don't mean it lightly, because I mean, what a depressing meeting. Hopefully, hopefully at the next meeting, Ted, you can try to find a little bit of good news for us. But in the meantime, boy, we have a hell of a lot of work to do.
We do. There are a lot of things that we need to do to address all these issues that are coming at us. And I think you're all aware we have projects in work to address all of these things, including the toxins on the rivers and trying to enhance our shallow groundwater sources and, in fact, develop a new shallow groundwater source along the Des Moines River. I think that's appears to be our best option long-term to get away from nitrates and cyanobacteria and toxins and ammonia and all of these things that the rivers bring us that are difficult to deal with.
Just ballpark it for me, Ted. If we were to identify and go forward with building a shallow water source like that, how long would it take us to get something like that online?
I would say that I'm glad Mike is here, so I can lateral that question to Mike.
Let's just say
5 years.
Yeah, 3 to 5. 3 to 5 would be good. We might be able to speed that up a little bit. I think it's probably, I could look at the CIP, but my guess is it's in there probably as a four-year timeline.
And how much water would we be able to take from a source like that?
I think we have a budget built for like 20 or 30 million gallons per day. Okay. We can double back on that.
And the cost of something like that is what?
Let's go 20 million and north of that.
Okay.
I mean, to your point, Graham, I mean, things keep coming at us, and they're only going to keep coming at us. And it seems to me that it's time for our next great idea, you know, where we had the gallery system. Now we need to figure out what our next great idea is, similar to the gallery system, to help us manage not needing that reliance on maybe not needing the reliance or figuring out a way to manage our water sources so that we don't have these constant crises.
Absolutely. Well said. Absolutely. That's exactly where we are. And not to open a discussion into something else, but why it is so critical for us to make some decisions about these regional discussions, because we have virtually been in a holding pattern for 4 years talking about regional opportunities. And at some point, we're going to have to start greenlighting some of these projects so Mike and his team can go to work going forward and not be in a holding pattern anymore. So, Andrea, I like the way you're talking, because we really do need the next great idea. And our board needs to start green lighting some of this stuff so that they, you know, the team can go to work.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll get to that end sooner than later. If there's no other questions or comments, I'll open it up for any public comments. If you have a public comment, I'm not hearing you. You may still be on mute.
I don't see any hands raised. If you do want to make public comment, please raise your hand using the raise hand feature. Still see none.
All right. Well, with that then, I'll go ahead and adjourn our September 1st Des Moines Water Works Planning Committee. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.